You're listening to an Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat Minisode. And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat Minisode. This week, we're actually reviewing two different films. Justin had the opportunity to check out Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, and we both had the opportunity to check out Antoine Fuqua's Magnificent Seven. All right, so we recorded this when we recorded the main episode. I'm just going to go ahead and cut over to that audio right now and enjoy. Why don't you go ahead and tell us about Miss Peregrine's something, something, something.
Something, something, something. Will and Meg. The film's name is actually hard to remember. I remember I was calling it a number of different things.
Wubba lubba dub dub.
I haven't read the book, but I did actually buy another book from the same author for my daughter a few weeks ago. She was very interested in it. But I actually got a chance to see Tim Burton's Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. The film itself is about when the character Jacob discovers clues to a mystery that stretches across time. He finds Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. The danger deepens after he gets to know the residents of the home and learns about their special powers. Basically, a lot of people, as far as critics and people that have seen this, are kind of marking this off as like a Harry Potter mixed with X-Men type vibe. For me, I have to say, I was pleasantly surprised. I love Tim Burton. I love good Tim Burton. I miss the days of looking forward to Tim Burton films. And I'm not hating on Burton. Well, maybe a little. But the point is that he's kind of just gotten lazy. Now, this is not an original Tim Burton piece. This is another adaption based off somebody else's book or popular novel or popular comic book. Whatever it is that he does these days. He just kind of does whatever he does. At least he's not doing fucking Dumbo, okay? Never do Dumbo, Tim. Please don't do it. I don't know why you would do it in the first place. But
no, given his comments about, you know, like race and whatnot in film, I'm sure he'd be more than happy with making a live action Dumbo remake complete with racist crows and everything.
Well, even so, there is a reference to Dumbo in this. But here's the thing, though. This movie is the closest thing to what I would consider pure Burton. In a long, long time, I feel like no other film has had as much heart as this film has had since maybe even Edward Scissorhands. That's going back far, man, early 90s.
Yeah, but that's a trip back.
This film really worked well for the most part. There's quite a few plot holes because of the simple fact that it has to deal with time travel. There's these different channels or portals or whatever they call it, that, where they can travel through to different times and things like that. But it worked overall. Very visually stunning. Tim Burton's visual aesthetic is completely at the forefront here. And Eva Green, oh my God, I've talked about her a million times on the podcast.
She is gorgeous.
Not only gorgeous, but she provides a very interesting and quirky Burton-type character with Miss Peregrine. She's fantastic in the film, though I would say largely left out of a lot of key elements where she should be included. She's so great in this film that I would have to say that 80% of the reason why I loved it is because of Eva Green. She's definitely, a lot of fans hate Dark Shadows. Okay. We know she was in that with Johnny Depp. Tim Burton had a huge miss with that film. In this one, she did an amazing job, brought on a great character performance. Aja Butterfield playing the main character, Jake here, he was the second in the running for the brand new Spider-Man. And I'll tell you, Nick, I'm super glad he didn't get the job. He's one of the most flat performances in the film. Oh. And he's the one that's supposed to carry the film now.
He wasn't bad in Ender's Game.
He was not. No, and I was thinking that. No, he was fine. He was a lot younger. There was a little bit of an issue through watching it. Nick, I'm not sure if he was going through puberty at the time they filmed this, but everything was overdubbed. Now, I know that there's always overdubbing for films, but
yeah, ADR's a thing.
Everything was done that way, and it sounded like his lips never caught up with the audio, so maybe his voice changed and they made him go in and redo everything. I don't know, but everything was flat. His line delivery was flat so much. But other than that, you know, I had a great time with the movie, a great fantasy piece, almost perfect for the October season. My daughter got scared. There's awesome Burton monsters and creatures, and it's definitely within the realm of Burton getting back to form as much as he possibly can. And I thought it looked visually stunning. Now, a little bit of an issue. I complained to as we were watching it, I'm like, dude, Samuel L. Jackson is just thrown in everything. He plays one of the worst villains, I would have to say, of the year in this film as Baron, who is this character that travels through these portals, and they're trying to...
Worse than when he was in The Spirit?
Not quite that. No. He has fun with this. He definitely hams it up in this. He has fun. For the most part, he's okay to watch, but it's just like, dude... I'm sick of seeing Samuel L. Jackson just show up and everything, playing the same
character. He is a workhorse, man. He takes literally everything that they give him, I swear.
But a couple other things, a couple other characters that were really great. I'd have to say that Terrence Stamp shows up here as Aja Butterfield's characters, Jake, his grandfather, Abe Portman, and Terrence Stamp is so great, and that the relationship between Jake and his grandfather is so heartfelt, so real. And also, it feels so real when you see Jake's actual connection to his parents and how parents are in this day and age. It's so portrayed so realistically. All the children actors that played the peculiar children in the children's home were fantastic. I actually really liked this movie quite a bit, Nick. There's not much else to say other than the fact that when the end gets there, you're waiting for it, and it goes into pure Burton-esque territory. I really walked away pleasantly surprised by this. It's great for the family. It's great for starting off the Halloween October season. And as I said, Nick, it's probably, I'd have to say, if I put a number on it, it's Burton's best film within the realm of what Burton makes since Big Fish. I'm going to give Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children a 7 out of 10 rating. By nowhere near being a perfect film, it's actually very far from it, but the visual aesthetic of the film and Burton's actual full representation of what we love about his films is at the forefront. I enjoyed that a lot about it.
All right. Well, we actually both had the opportunity to check out a film. You mentioned last week that you got a chance to see The Magnificent Seven, and I have also now seen The Magnificent Seven. Anton Fuqua's, it's not a remake of the American remake of The Seven Samurai. It's basically another reimagining of The Seven Samurai directly. So it's not a remake of the Western from, what was it, 1960? I believe it came out.
It's hard for anyone to differentiate this from the original American
remake. Most people are going to think that that's what it is. Yeah,
it's so iconic. And yeah. You know what? It is 1960. It came out, and that was John Sturges' The Magnificent Seven, which is, in my opinion, one of the best Westerns ever made.
Oh, it's a fantastic movie. And I wish I could say the same thing about this film, Justin. And I'm going to go ahead and kick this off here, if you don't mind. I just made some bullet points about the things that I really, really didn't like.
No, I don't mind at all. You know what? I have to say, I have a story about this film, Nick. I didn't tell you about the story that I had when I watched The Magnificent Seven.
All right.
I was in the middle of a theater, and right as the action starts to amp up, right in about the middle of the film, kind of waiting for things to happen in this movie, you're watching the characters meet each other and get motivated, and the plot's developing, or as you would call it, a plot. And in the middle of the movie, a siren alarms, and there's a voice that comes over the loudspeakers in the theater. Please evacuate the theater. Please evacuate the theater. Emergency. So myself and my brother-in-law, Eric, have to leave the theater and run outside. And we waited out there for like 25 minutes. And fire trucks showed up. We didn't really even know what was going on. We're like, what the hell, dude? This is nuts. Did someone like throw a bomb in here? What's going on? You know, things happen in movie theaters all the time, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, nowadays,
get shot, stabbed, so you never know. So we're waiting there for half an hour. And finally, after that, we're like, okay, we can go back in and finish the movie. I waited out there a half an hour in the middle of this movie to go back in and finish it. We did. And luckily, they caught it right at the same spot we left off at. And we got to finish it. Quick little story, but that's never happened to me. I know we had our story about X-Men Days of Future Past, where we had to drive from one theater to the other because the one theater had like electrical problems, or it was flooding or some shit.
It was a water pipe broke or something like that. Yeah.
So with this one, I had to leave and come back in, but I finished it. So story is told. I went through hell to see The Magnificent Seven.
All right. You know what? And Justin, I'm sorry to say, but that story was more exciting than anything that I watched in the Magnificent Seven. As the Giants are 45 seconds away from losing their second in a row. Thank you very much, Big Blue, for that. Let's just turn the game off now. I don't need to watch the rest of that. All right. Villain, Justin. Peter Sarsgaard's villain.
I knew it.
Well, and you know what? And this is a common theme on this podcast, so anybody that listens to our reviews knows this by now, but if your villain is complete and total shit, if they're very weakly written and ineffective, it's going to kill the movie for us at least a little bit. This dude shows up at the very beginning of the movie, and he disappears for over an hour. I swear it was over an hour. Like, he's gone for a majority of the runtime in this film. What the hell? Like, seriously, like, if you want to make this guy out to be, like, this super cool badass or, like, somebody that these townspeople should fear, shouldn't he, you know, fucking maybe be around once in a while to do something? Anything. Literally anything. I would have taken literally anything. He's gone. He's not even there. Oh,
God. He has absolutely no impact to anything to do with the film, and that's the number one thing. Oh. You know, when they introduce him, At first, I was kind of catching on with it. They introduce him in a scene in the church town that he's taken over because he's a gold miner and he's a businessman. Super badass. And you know what? The funny thing is, you know, I tried to look at it as like, I've watched 1,000 Westerns, and they literally said like, you know what? Let's just make him like the most generic Western villain because there's a lot of them. And it makes sense if you look at it as a generic Western. Okay, but this isn't a generic Western. This is a Western that's few and far between, very different. Okay, Westerns are not a big thing in modern day cinema. This is supposed to be the brand new reinvention, or I would say revisioning of a Western, a modern day blockbuster turned into a Western. So you'd think they'd put a little bit more effort into their villain. The first scene, he has a little bit of impact, but at the same time,
it's an effective scene.
We're not completely sold on him. He just seems like kind of like a corrupt businessman who, of course, back then will shoot people to get his way. That's not too out of the ordinary. That's what people did back then. Mm-hmm. It's not that different. But as you said, Nick, throughout the rest of the film, we're kind of just hanging out with the quote-unquote Magnificent Seven, though I'd almost call them the mediocre kind of half-written Seven.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. Jesus.
But, you know, the funny thing is, though, you and I will disagree, though, when it comes to the point that I actually did enjoy a large portion of this film.
Well, that's probably where our ratings are going to completely differ. Other things that I had wrong with this film, it is utterly and completely predictable. You have Ethan Hawke's character, whose name is Goodnight for whatever the fuck reason. And, you know, of course, he has a gut check moment early on in the film, only to come back at a pivotal moment of the plot later when it requires him to. You know it's going to happen. They're completely setting it up. It's one of those things that just, I think, being a cinephile just ruins movies for you in this way. But that was terrible about it. You know, you want to know who the biggest hero in this film was, Justin? This is one of the things I wrote down. Haley Bennett's corset. Man. Those corsets were fucking working hard, man, and work well. They very, very well did. My biggest
problem. She was way too pretty to be.
And that's one of my key things about this film, Justin. Did this feel like a gritty, raw Western to you, or did this feel like it was a little bit too commercial, a little too clean?
Here's the thing, man. We're going to get to this because we have to talk about it. This is the most commercial, the most blockbuster type Western film I've ever seen.
Yeah,
because this is what they decided to do. Now, I understand the reasoning behind it. They're like, okay, we've got all these comic book movies. We have all these other disaster porn films. We have this, we have that, we have science fiction, whatever. Let's try to make the Western into a big budget blockbuster. That's what I said when we reviewed the first trailer on Epic Previews months ago.
Yeah.
Does it work? For me, it's in some respects, yes. In other respects, no. But it's too good looking. And I had mentioned to my brother-in-law when I was watching it, I'm like, that's CGI. Now, there is some beautiful location shooting
here. There's a
really
shitty shot of like a horse flipping over a tent somewhere in the middle of the film, like a horse flipping over a tent or whatever. So fucking fake. All the CGI in this was bad.
I wouldn't say it's that bad, Nick. I would disagree with you on that.
There were a couple of shots that were terrible.
I did see it.
couple of them.
I did see it on a nice big 4K screen. So,
well, I of course saw it at the AMC, so, you know, that's definitely going to factor into the visual aesthetic of the film. But, I mean, for the most part, I think the CGI was okay. But, you know, there were a couple scenes like that horse, I don't know, they shot out the legs or they blew it up or whatever, and it flipped over the tent.
You're finding a good nitpick. You're finding a good nitpick, but rightly so.
Because it took me right out of the film. It was so bad.
I have to get to this, though.
Do it up.
Because this is the main point here. Okay, who's in this film? Who's the biggest star in this film? Not Denzel Washington.
Oh, really?
It's Chris fucking Pratt, dude. He's the guy. He's the hot guy in the corner now. Hollywood's new it guy, right? So, love Denzel. I'm going to throw this out of the way. I'm going to get this out of the way so we can just move on from Denzel. Denzel was fine in this. Denzel did his job. He had charisma. He had a presence in the film. He's one of the key parts that I enjoyed.
Yeah, Denzel's always great. Yeah.
Though I didn't understand the fact. Now, you and I discussed this previous to seeing this. Like, are they ever going to explain why there's like a black cowboy walking around? Because back then it wasn't accurate. But nope, they don't.
Nope.
But getting to Pratt. Okay, so Pratt, I like Pratt. I had a problem with Pratt before Guardians. He sold me on that. I loved him in Jurassic World. So now it feels like they're throwing him into everything they possibly can. He's the new It guy. And I'm looking forward to him in Passengers in a couple of months here. But I could not get sold as him as a cowboy. No matter how hard he tried with his act and with his portrayal and with his, you know, spitting and the wheat in his mouth and his hand on the gun and he's a gunslinger, he's a card player, he's a chiseler. You know, like, at first I'm like, I can't buy him at all. Halfway through it, Nick, I almost felt like he had it. I was like, okay, I might be able to buy him as a cowboy. By the end of the film, I didn't. There's just something about Chris Pratt, he just does not fall into that. Now, I understand why they're trying to put him in that role. He seems like the right guy for the part. And theoretically, if you look at who Chris Pratt is and what characters he's done in the past have been, for me, he fell flat. He does not portray a cowboy to me. And in fact, Nick, he takes me out of the film almost every scene that he's in.
Well, and I'll piggyback right off of that. I'm not going to blame Pratt for that as much as I'm going to blame Fuqua's direction and the script. Because, as I said, the whole thing feels a little bit too clean and a little bit commercialized. And Pratt's not the only one that they write like these kind of comedic flourishes for.
Look at the Jack Horn character.
Oh, exactly. But, you know, this thing just meandered all over the place. It was a boring movie. I was so bored when I was watching this thing. It never engaged me. It never immersed me in this world. So every time they tried to go to Pratt, and, you know, Pratt had a lot of the comedy in this film. He had a lot of it.
There were some marks. He hit some marks. There's some good comedic elements.
There's a couple of good ones, but a lot of them really fall flat.
Yeah,
a lot of them just don't hit. And I think Pratt did the best with the material that he was given. I mean, I think they wrote the role like kind of for Pratt. Like they wanted Pratt to be Pratt-ish.
It seemed that way, honestly.
It doesn't fit in here. And I was never engaged in this world. I was never drawn into it. I was never drawn into the struggle of this town against the villain. That's a big problem with the script, as we already mentioned. And I don't think that that's the problem with it. And to go back to the villains, Justin, have you seen a fucking group of villains since Stormtroopers that were this piss poor of shots as these guys were?
We are talking about a Western, though, Nick.
We're talking about a Western. I know. And I know the Magnificent Seven are supposed to be like super exceptionally gifted and everything. But sweet Jesus, it's like that none of them have ever shot a gun before. They barely ever hit anything.
That's going to get to my...
It's just so, so shitty.
That's going to get to my praise of the film. However, that also leads to my issues with the film. This was, Nick, and you can disagree with me all you want, I thought one of the most visually stunning Westerns as far as the action is concerned. It was so...
I actually loved the action set pieces.
I loved all the gunfights, the ending, any of the gun battles. The first time the Seven show up in the town that they're trying to save.
Fantastic scene. Actually, I thought that was better than the ending, to be honest.
Yeah, I liked it better than the ending. I mean, I was in awe, dude. I love Westerns. I grew up watching Westerns with my grandfather.
Yeah.
I've seen everything from, you name it, dude. You and I have talked about this. I love old school Westerns. And for me, I wanted this film to succeed because I wouldn't necessarily mind if the Western took the blockbuster route if I knew that it would be a route that fit it perfectly, that it would work within the realm of what those films are meant to be. And, you know, we have real practical effects. We have a lot of people on horses in this. We have real practical locations. We have the practical town that they built. Yes, there's CG, but to be honest with you, the majority of the CG is in some of the effects and the backgrounds.
A lot of it's cleanup work and stuff like that, too. Yeah, there was a lot of this that was done practically.
I tried my best, Nick. I really went into this wanting to love it because the cast is good, the idea is good, and I really tried not to look at it as a remake of John Sturges' The Magnificent Seven, which is one of my favorite Westerns, you know, that had Yul Brynner, Steve McQueen, and Charles Bronson. And of course, Eli Wallach is the amazing villain, Calvera, who is a very likable villain in that film. He's charming, he's evil, but he's likable, he's relatable. You're not looking at him as a bad guy. You know that he's a bad guy, but you're like, dude, this guy's like, you kind of laugh at what he's saying. And this complete waste of a villain, like probably definitely, and we'll probably put this on our top five worst villains of the year for sure. I know I will.
But easily, for me,
you know, I enjoyed for the most part that it was a fun, cool, well-shot shoot 'em up. I had to give him that much because that part of the Western genre, I don't think, Nick, has ever been done the way that this has been done. It was so over the top, so awesomely shot. They really went all out in doing that, and I think they succeeded in that respect, at least.
Well, I want to go ahead and I want to get into ratings here after I get into Nick's fucking rant.
Shut up! Shut up!
No!
Shut
up! No!
Wrong!
Now shut the fuck up and let me do my
shut
job!
Stop it, you wing, you baby!
You want to know
shut
what killed this film for me, Justin?
Shut up!
It wasn't any of the stuff that we talked about previously, and this is going to get into spoiler territory, so if you haven't seen the film yet and you want to save this for yourself, whatever. But the 11th hour reveal that Bogue, that's the villain, Peter Sarsgaard's character, was the one that killed Chisholm's family, that's Washington's character, and tried to kill him. All of a sudden, it comes out of the middle of goddamn nowhere with like 15 minutes left to go in the movie, and it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Dude, I was so mad. Oh my god, that ruined it. That made me drop like,
It immediately docked like 2 points off of my final rating for this film. It was a dismal, so much bullshit.
Disgusting.
I absolutely fucking hated it. It was just one of those things. They tried to force it into the script to try to inflict more drama into
it. It was last minute. It was so last minute. It was at the end. It was at the end.
You know what? It's a symptom of Sarsgaard being such an ineffectual villain in the first place that they just wanted to try to inject a little bit more drama in there in the final stage, and it doesn't fucking work. It was terrible. So I'm going to rate this film right now. I'm going to jump on mine, and I'm going to let you talk and do your rating. 4 out of 10. As good as the action set pieces were, and don't get me wrong, they were beautiful, but nothing else about this film clicked for me. I think that the roles, for the most part, were very well cast, and I think that they had some good moments, but they were killed by how boring and plodding this script was. 4 out of 10. I was so fucking disappointed by this thing.
Well, guess what, Nick? I'm not too far off with this. You know, for me, it had some great eye candy. For me, it was the excitement of being in the theater and seeing a brand new movie with awesome actors, you know, talented actors, and a great lead like Denzel Washington leading this thing.
Denzel,
you know, as the main character. And he's so great. He's got great charisma. He carried the film. And it's so refreshing to see, as we talked about many times in the podcast, a Western dude of all things. I'm so fatigued and sick of comic book movies, though they kind of tried to make this into
Wait,
the
you're
Avengers
sick of what?
Of comic
I don't know.
Movies.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't.
Damn right, we ain't talking about that for a long time. But for me, as much of a disappointment as this film was, I still enjoyed the gunfights. Man, honestly, I'm going to rewatch this movie. You better damn well believe it, just for the gunfights, because they were so good. But I just hope that, you know, filmmakers from here on out take note of what made this movie fail and what to do with future films. You know, we had The Hateful Eight last year, Bone Tomahawk, 2 Westerns, 1 bigger Western, 1 smaller Western, both way better than The Magnificent Seven.
Way better.
Nowhere near the action set pieces that this film had, but way better as far as characters, script, delivery, overall.
And you've got to have characters, and you've got to have that
Westerns
delivery.
Are all about characters, man.
Exactly.
Westerns are all about character. That's what it is. That's all we care about, Westerns. Go back and watch even the shittiest John Wayne Western.
And that's one of the great things about
great
Westerns is that real bastard of a villain. You know, that it's so great. They were always good.
Look at, you know what I looked at? You know what I thought of, Nick? I was doing cardio at the gym downstairs at my apartment complex 2 weeks ago before I even came to see The Magnificent Seven at the theater. And what was on TV was Unforgiven. And Gene Hackman's villain in that film, as hammy as he is, as over the top as he is, he's so perfect. He's got a great sense of menace, but he's a real person. You can relate to him. You understand him. You get his motivations. But when he does what he's doing, he's so bad. You want to see Clint Eastwood shoot his face, but he's still a good character. And this film, horrible villain, horrible portrayal. Overall, it just was a failed film. So I'm going to give The Magnificent Seven a 5 out of 10 rating.
Man, it's sad, very sad. This is one of my most anticipated films of the fall season. So fall is not following very far off the heels of summer. It's just not racking up very, very good. And so we'll wrap up this mini-sode here. You can find us, of course, Epic Film Guys, literally everywhere on social media, literally any podcatcher that you want. Please check us out there. As always, thank you very much for listening to this Epic Film Guys Cinema Beat mini-sode, and we will see you at the movies.